I'm your host, Eris Strife.
And this is a new installment. Yeah, installment of Little Demons. It's going to be called Insights with Eris. And in these episodes, we're going to hang out, chill, relax, you know, grab a beer, or in my case, smoke a joint. And we're just going to take things down a notch. And to kick off today's episode, I want to share with you an experience I had a few days ago. So a couple of days ago, I had a very brief appearance on another podcast called 8-Ball Sports Show. And if you're not listening to 8-Ball Sports Show, you should be doing that. It's amazing. And how this all came to be was they set up a Patreon page, and they had like this little contest thing where the first Patreon would have a guest appearance on their show. And I've been harassing one of the guys, Mark, for months to get on board with Crime and Sports and listen to Crime and Sports and all that fun stuff. So finally when they announced this contest thing, I was like, look, hey, I'll donate to your Patreon if you donate to Crime and Sports. Like, fuck the whole guest appearance thing. Just like, you know, trying to spread the love a little bit. And they actually did wind up signing up to the Crime and Sports Patreon, which is really cool. And I think Mark also signed up as well. And Jimmy fucked up his name, unless there actually is a Mike She that donated. If there is, good for you. But if it was Mark Shea that wound up signing up as well, that's really awesome. Thanks, man. So even more reason to listen to 8-Ball Sports Show, because they're actually pretty cool guys. But anyways, I wound up actually doing a brief thing on the show anyways. Literally no big deal. It's not like I'm walking around, yeah, I'm super famous now. Really not. But I don't think I made too much of an ass of myself. However, I'm pretty sure that they think I'm some cock-obsessed weirdo. Because here's the thing. I've been kind of harassing one of the hosts of the show, Eric, for a dick pic for the last few months. And it's kind of like, I don't know if I have enough clout to say inside joke, but it's like sort of a thing going back to one of their old episodes where at the end of the episode, I can't remember who says it, but they say that if we send in our phone number, they'll send us a dick pic from Eric. So of course, me being me, what do you think I did? I sent them my phone number. And I honestly was expecting like some sort of like Google image of a gross, horrendous dick. But nothing. And it's been brought up on the show a couple of times, and I've tweeted out to them about it a few times. God, I sound so lame. And I'm just fucking about. But when I was talking to them on their show the other day, I brought it up, because I'm an asshole, so of course I'm going to bring it up. But, so that got brought up at the very beginning, and we're chatting and whatever. And at the very end, Mark does this, like, weird Savannah fart facts thing, and he's listing off some topics, and the first two topics were boring and I honestly can't even remember them, but the third one was a penis festival. And of course I'm thinking, I'm like, holy shit, a penis festival, what the fuck is that? So of course I'm gonna pick that. So then after talking, you know, a good solid couple of minutes about wanting a picture of Eric's dick, and then at the very end, this penis festival comes up. I'm pretty sure that they think I'm some cock-obsessed weirdo. But really, I'm just 12. I find penises funny. So Mark brings up this penis festival. And to be honest, I don't know what I thought it was, but it sounded hilarious. But of course, all I heard was, it's a celebration of the penis. So now I'm thinking that this whole festival is just a bunch of, like, Japanese dudes strutting around cock first, you know, Donald Ducking it with pride. And of course, because I'm 12, I think that's hilarious. But then, when you start to think about it, this is also the same country that brought us tentacle porn. So, who knows what this is really about? So you guys want to know about the penis festival? Of course you do. It's a penis festival. So the penis festival happens every April in Kawasaki. Surprise, not just a motorcycle manufacturer. And that's in Japan for all you uneducated cretins. And this penis festival is exactly as it sounds, I guess. It's basically a bunch of people parading around with giant paper mache dicks. At least they look to be paper mache. But I mean, like, these things are legit. You know, it doesn't look like a kindergartner made them. There's so much detail put into them, like, they have, like, balls in the shaft and the head, and, you know, they even put veins, and I'm not talking, like, painted on veins, like, none of that shit. They actually sculpt veins onto it, so it's, like, 3D-ish. They even put on that weird string-looking thing that's at the top of the head. They even paint on what I can only assume are cum streaks, you know, on the shaft. An impressive amount of detail is what I'm getting at here. This shit's the real deal. A step above your 5-year-old's kindergarten art project. And as fucked up and weird as Japan can be, I'd like to think that they didn't have 5-year-olds make giant dicks for the penis festival. So along with these giant pink dicks, oh yeah, they're bright pink too, which makes it even better. There's also penis-shaped lollipops, and they're not like the lame flatback ones. These actually look like candied dildos on a stick. And they look kind of delicious, if I'm going to be completely honest. And there's candles and a whole bunch of other shit as well. But this is a legit thing that happens in Kawasaki, Japan, every April. Now, before we get into this, I just want to get two things off my chest. And I know I said I wouldn't get all ranty in this. It's just a little rant. Little wee baby rant. There are some travel articles out there regarding this festival, saying that this festival is a celebration of manhood. Which, as you'll soon find out, is really not the case. And these articles also describe Japan as being a very demure, proper, unsexualized country. And I don't know, demure isn't really the word that comes to mind when I think of Japan. This is the same country, after all, that came up with tentacle porn and has a black market for used panties. I don't know, I just feel like these authors should have watched an anime or something before commenting on Japanese culture. Moving on. So we already know that the Penis Festival, also known as the Kanemaru Matsuri, is held every April, and this festival is based around the, I am going to butcher this so bad, Kanayama Jinjan? Jinja? Kanayama Jinja. I think that's it. Shrine, which is a small Shinto shrine in Kawasaki, Japan. And there are a few different legends regarding, you know, what the shrine was built to represent and what it was dedicated to. So I'm going to tell you the one that makes the most sense to me. And if I'm wrong, I'm sorry, but this is what I could find on the internet. And I don't exactly have ancient Japanese history scholars on my tab. I'm sorry, I just don't. So legend has it that a demon fell in love with this woman, and when her marriage was announced, the demon decided to crawl up inside her vagina, and then when the couple went to consummate their marriage, or whatever the Japanese version of that is, the demon bit off the husband's penis. She wound up getting married again, and demon bit off husband number two's penis. And I mean, what a great way to say that you're not in the mood. Like, sorry, I have a demon in my vagina. Wish I could. Sorry, not today. Demon cooch, you know? So then the local blacksmith had a brilliant idea and thought if he made an iron dick, that would solve this demon issue. So then when this iron penis was used, it broke all the demon's teeth and thus the demon died. And the first demon slaying dildo was created. And I guess the woman was so impressed by his demon slaying abilities that she wound up marrying him. And as far as I can tell, nobody knows what happened to the other two husbands before. But the shrine in Kawasaki was created to commemorate that event. Thus the shrine being dubbed the Shrine of the Iron Phallus. And the shrine was originally built to represent marital longevity, fertility, married couple harmony, and of course, you know, the health of the penis. You know, basically trying to pray away ED. But as time progressed, Kawasaki became a major lodging port for traders because it was along one of the major trading routes for ships. And of course, any lodging or trading post anywhere, really, there's going to be an abundance of prostitutes. You know, a lot of people coming in and out, no pun intended. You know, and if you want to make money, you go where the business is. And over time, this shrine being the closest holy place in the area, a lot of prostitutes went there to pray for good business and, you know, to try to pray away their STIs. Sounds silly now, but, you know, that was their thinking back then. That was the thinking all over the world. So then in 1969, you know, when we're starting to learn about sexual health and how STIs are spread and whatnot, the holy person of this shrine at the time came up with the idea of having a festival in honor of the shrine and the iron phallus. And incorporated into this festival is STI prevention, sex ed information, and it also raises funds for HIV research. And I mean, this is a really smart idea, because when you think about it, this is a town full of prostitutes that are, you know, trying to pray their STIs away. And at this time, you know, we're learning that medically that's not possible, and also that there's ways to prevent this. And by doing it in a fun and festive way, it really takes away from, you know, any embarrassment or shame someone might have over their profession. Because let's face it, in pretty much every culture in the world, prostitution is generally looked down on. I really wish it wasn't that way, but unfortunately it is. So I mean, doing a festival like this really takes away from that awkwardness while providing the public with much needed information. And this is some pretty cool shit. So the peak of the festival is this procession of three different types of dongs. And the first one is a large black iron dick that's inside of a mini Shinto shrine. And the second one is really the highlight of the whole festival. And it's this massive pink dick. And what's cool about this one is, one, it's the biggest out of all of them and it's pink. But two, it's carried by a bunch of drag queens. And that's actually a tradition of this festival. And they go all out, totally play it up. I mean, really, you're gonna ask a bunch of drag queens to give up the spotlight? Bitch, please. And they're the ones that collect all the donations for the festival and HIV research. I just think it's really cool to have a festival that's, you know, centered around drag queens. And then the last penis in the parade of cocks is actually the oldest one and is carved out of wood. And this festival still goes on today and people from all over the world check it out. So that's the Kawasaki Penis Festival. And I gotta say, I dig it. You know, not only are there just dicks everywhere, which is fun and wonderful and all on its own, but I also think that it humanizes sex workers because, you know, it's bringing them out into the community rather than, you know, hiding them in the dark drudges of society like in most places. But this festival is centered around basically the entire profession of sex work and providing them with information on, you know, how to work safely, STI and HIV information and prevention. All in all, I'd have to give this a plus one for humanity. Good job, Kawasaki. And speaking of humanity, I'm gonna switch gears here now and get into the whole insights thing that I wanted to try out with this whole insights with Eris fuckery. And this is where your beer, wine, whiskey, or in my case, weed. Tonight I am smoking Pineapple Express. I've been really digging the fruity strains lately, and it doesn't really taste pineapple-y at all. It's more like tropical. I mean, weed tastes like weed, but there's this weird pina colada mixed with tropical smoothie aftertaste. That's actually pretty awesome. I would honestly love to be smoking this on like a white sandy beach somewhere. Alas, Canada is not exactly known as a tropical destination, and I'll just have to pretend that the rain is the gentle mist of ocean waves crashing on jetted rocks. Now that we have an advertisement for Sandals Vacations playing in our head, let's talk about rape. Specifically Bill Cosby. But before we get to that, I think I just found a new reason to hate National Post. Seriously, I think I should just have a new segment called, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just do it. Drumroll, please. introducing for the first time a brand new little demon segment called What the Fuck National Post. So this article was published by Tristan Hopper on May 3rd of 2018. So this is recently. And this popped up during a random 4 a.m. Google search that I was doing. And this is the title of the article. Happy birthday, Karl Marx. We could have done without the millions dead. I shit you not. That is the actual title. So as it turns out, Saturday, which is today, the day that I'm recording this, is Karl Marx's 200th birthday. And Karl Marx is most famously known for writing the Communist Manifesto. And when thinking of communism, you might be thinking of, you know, Stalin, China, Soviet Union, I guess North Korea, if that's what we're calling it. And you might think, but Eris, isn't that bad? And as a future silver-haired middle-aged white man, I will say there is no such thing as a bad political system. There are only bad politicians. And Marx's version of communism is nothing like we've seen in China or even Stalin's Soviet Union. On top of that, Karl Marx died in 1883, which would have made Stalin 5 at the time. So unless he was clairvoyant, I don't think Karl Marx had any way of knowing of how Stalin and his goons would interpret his works to justify their political regime. And I actually remember being in university and the first time learning about Marx and communist theory and all of that. And our professor actually saying that communist philosophy is nothing like we see in the world today or even in modern history. And Karl Marx lived in London, England for most of his time as a political philosopher because he was exiled from his home country of Prussia for smack-talking the monarchy a little bit. So you can see why he might have just a little bit of animosity towards the quote-unquote state. And interestingly enough, during the time that Marx is writing his political ideas, there's this massive social movement that's happening across Europe, and it spans like 50 or so countries, where the middle class is revolting against the monarchy because they want more rights and liberties and all that shit. Rule number two, don't piss off the middle class. And it's fascinating because this is happening all at the same time across multiple different countries during a time when the internet didn't exist yet. And that's one of the main things that people criticize about Marx is his complete dismissal of human psychology and human behavior. But I mean, like, this is in the mid-1800s. What we know about human behavior, and especially when it comes to behaving in a group or, you know, society, what we knew back then is nowhere near what we know now. And what we know now isn't much either. There was actually an amazing broadcast done back in 1938 with Orson Welles, and he did a live broadcast over the radio of H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. And anyone that's studied communications or journalism, sociology, or even psychology has probably heard of this broadcast. And it's phenomenal. But this broadcast completely debunked the mass communication theory of that time. So I'm saying that, you know, it could be possible that Karl Marx was influenced by, you know, the social climate during his time. And I don't really think he could foresee how his theories would be used today. And if you take a look on a globe, you'll notice that Prussia doesn't exist anymore. The part of Prussia that Karl Marx grew up in is now part of Germany. Funny how things change. So, shall we continue on to find out what this article is all about? So this Tristan Hopper continues on to say, on Saturday, Karl Marx turns 200 years old, a German dissident who spent most of his days in exile, that would have been London, England. Marx devoted his life to the notion that a literal heaven on earth was just a revolution away.
Instead, he ended up inspiring one of the most prolonged epics of suffering in modern history. Amazingly, this seems to have done very little to tarnish Marx's apparent Teflon reputation. He has just got a fawning biopic, he got glowing birthday wishes in the New York Times, and this weekend, EU Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker will be unveiling a statue of the man in Marx's hometown of Trier, Germany. Europe already had plenty of statues of Marx, although you might not know it because a lot of them were pulled down in the late 1980s. That would be at the end of the Cold War, the Berlin Wall, East, West Germany, that fun stuff. Here's a quick reminder of why people would have felt the need to do that. Yes, the communist terror is Marx's fault. Oh, Lord. I feel like this guy just watched a bunch of Soviet propaganda and based his article on that.
I mean, if he wanted to criticize Marx, you know, as a person or his theories, go nuts, whatever, I don't give a shit. But it should be common knowledge by now that to say that Karl Marx is single-handedly responsible for the massive amounts of atrocities committed under the name of communism that has occurred throughout history is just erroneous. Yeah, that's right. I said erroneous. Yeah. And the rest of our article is just basically saying that Karl Marx is to blame for, you know, Stalin systematically killing millions of people. I think it was like over 20 million people. All the shit in China he's to blame for, and apparently he's to blame for North Korea as well. What the fuck, National Post? There you have it. The first ever Little Demons What the Fuck National Post segment.
All right, so let's talk about Bill Cosby. So a couple weeks ago, I found out that he was convicted. And I had no idea that there was even a second trial to begin with. I mean, had I known, I would have definitely, at the very least, mentioned something about it. This is the guy that started the whole Me Too movement. Like, I remember Bill Cosby's first trial, and that was all over the news during the entire process. Like, even here in Canada. And Jim Jefferies even had a joke about him on one of his specials. Like, it was hot shit. And, you know, and there was so much debate around, you know, did he do it? Did he not do it? And then finally it comes to verdict day and it's a hung jury. And a lot of people speculated that part of the reason why there was a hung jury was because there's just so much media coverage and media presence over this case. And it just wound up saturating the trial. So I'm just trying to think, you know, why wasn't there as much media coverage the second time around? Was it intentional to prevent the slight chance that a heavily publicized trial could have an effect on a verdict? But if that were the case, I would assume that verdict day and the verdict would be, but it really wasn't. I mean, I found out from somebody replying to a comment I made on a Facebook post. I found out through Facebook. I mean, think about what the media is capable of in this day and age. Like, think about top stories, big scandals, things like that. And, you know, just how much coverage a story can get to the point where you start feeling like no matter where you go, that's all that people are going to be talking about. But with Bill Cosby's conviction, it just seemed like, you know, news outlets and the media just went, oh yeah, so this happened, and just moved on. So then that got me thinking, was the lack of coverage still intentional, but it was to protect his reputation? He is a cultural icon after all. And if you listen to Crime and Sports, I think you guys know where I'm going with this. Because we see very often that when somebody becomes successful, most of the time, there's a silver-haired middle-aged white man in the background making money off of their success. So Lord knows who else knew what was going on, but kept it hush-hush because they didn't want to give up their paycheck. And now that Bill Cosby's been convicted, there could be some people out there that could be held liable for Bill Cosby's actions. I'm not saying for a fact that there are people out there that kept Cosby's rapey fingers hidden, but I will say chances are pretty good. So, the lack of coverage in this second trial could be a ploy to save their asses. I mean, it's not like we've never seen that before. In this day and age, it should be common knowledge that when money's involved, morals and ethics tend to be ignored. And I mean, if that's the case, the way I see it, Bill Cosby is an arrogant, narcissistic asshole and a rapist. So his reputation and anybody that's trying to protect it to save their own ass can go fuck themselves. I'd really like to think that, you know, we as a society and even as a species have gotten past the point of sympathizing with rapists and potentially people that have taken part in the continuation of said rapings. My other thought is that there wasn't as much coverage for the second trial because people generally don't care. That the census among the general public is that this story isn't one that deserves multifaceted, multiple day coverage. And if that is the situation, it's still kind of interesting because you can see how the same story in a 5-year difference gets a noticeably different amount of publicity based on public interest. But what do you think? Do you even care? Do you think that Bill Cosby's second trial should have gotten more media coverage? Or are you generally just tired of hearing about people sticking their appendages where they don't belong? Go ahead and email littledemonspod@gmail.com and share your thoughts. Or if you prefer social media, you can go to facebook.com/littledemonspod or Twitter @littledemonspod. And I do just want to say that I will always welcome pictures of herpes-infested micropenises. Just so you guys are aware. Show me those bumpy micro dicks. And before I sign off, I just want to say, if there's anybody that's listening that's in the Ottawa area on May 19th, my really good friend Danielle Allard is having her CD release party at Collab Space. That's 70 Bongard Avenue in Ottawa. And for her new album, Passing Notes. It's going to be really awesome. I'm going to be there. And I'm even going to be missing Jim Jefferies in Hamilton for Danielle's CD release party. That's just how great of a musician she is and just all-round human being. I mean, I have broadcasted to the world several times that I would suck Jim Jefferies' dick for free. And he's going to be in Hamilton of all places. I would go just to see his reaction to Hamilton. Because the day before the Hamilton show, he's in London, Ontario. So, like, the suburbs of Ontario, I mean, it's been for ages since I've been to London, Ontario, but that's what I remember it as. It's just a giant subdivision. And then, of course, he'll get all the college and university kids as well because of all the schools around there. And then, so he's going from London, Ontario to then Hamilton. He's going to think that he's left Canada and is doing a show in Detroit for some reason. That's pretty much Hamilton. It's the Detroit of Canada. I mean, it was a city that was built around a steel mill and up until relatively recently was run by the Hells Angels. And they still have a motorcycle club there. And for all of you that are saying, oh, it's getting better, they're cleaning it up. I was there 6 months ago, hasn't fucking changed. And you know what? I'm okay with that because I spent my teen years growing up in Milton. So Hamilton has a very special place in my heart. So I'm bailing out of all of that for Danielle's CD release party, which of course she'll also be performing at. To give you a little bit of a taste of her music, the intro and outro of this podcast is actually from one of her songs. So if you're in Ottawa, May 19th, come out to Collab Space at 70 Bongard and check out Danielle Allard. That's DanielleAllard. And as always, you can find me on Facebook at Eristrife. That's ERISSTRIGH. I'm on Twitter at Tiny Doomfists. And I'm also on Snapchat at Tiny Doomfists as well. Send me your herpes-riddled micropenises. And if you could also write and review the show as well, that would be super awesome. Preferably 5 stars. And if you feel like you're in need of some good karma, feel free to subscribe to my Patreon at patreon.com/littledemonspod. That's it for today, and I'll see you guys later.